Hola, como le habíamos comentado, esta es una entrevista que tuvimos con el señor David J. Mailand, el cual es el podcaster o maestro, ya no sé si decirle podcaster o maestro, de la materia E1, Introducción a las Computadoras y el Internet de la Universidad de Harvard. Platicamos de algunas cosas acerca de su experiencia haciendo este podcast, el por qué el podcast se creó en inicios y cuál es el futuro del podcast. Está en inglés, no sé si sea bueno traducirla al español o comentar lo que se dijo en español. Ahí mandaron sus comentarios acerca de si hubieran querido o les gustaría más que se tradujera, pero ahí va la entrevista en su totalidad. Gracias. Okay, everything's okay.
Okay, terrific.
All right, first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to do this little interview with us. And
Absolutely.
since you are a very busy person, I suppose that you have something to do every day. That you are taking some minutes of your Saturday to talk with us. Thank
Well,
you.
happy to chat.
Can you tell me a little history about how this thing happened? I mean, how this thing started in Harvard University?
Sure. So we began this podcast really as an experiment for my particular course, which is Computer Science E1, Understanding Computers and the Internet. It's the most introductory computer science course at Harvard University's Extension School. And we decided in September to release the course's recordings, audio recordings, as a podcast so that our students could review the lectures or listen to the lectures while commuting to work or while working out or just generally while carrying an iPod around. And then a month or so later, when Steve Jobs announced the video iPod, within a couple of weeks, we went back to the lectures that had already happened, encoded them in QuickTime format, and released the videos as well so that students could also watch the lectures while commuting or while generally using their handheld devices.
Well, that is great. I mean, this is a very, very different approach of the use of technology. This is like portable knowledge.
Absolutely, I think so. What was a curious outgrowth, actually, of our experiment, which again was targeted initially at our students, was that once the university's newspaper called The Crimson published an article about our use of this podcast in the course, a number of bloggers and other websites ended up posting articles related to our use of this podcast. And it really took off from there. Since then, we've received notes such as your own, Adrian, when you first wrote me.
Thank you.
From random people on the internet saying they've happened across our podcast via certain podcast directories or iTunes, and so that we've actually had a great number of people outside of the course as well tuning in and getting a taste of what this particular course and its material has been like. So it's been a wonderful experiment this semester.
Do you have any kind of numbers of how many people outside the Harvard University listen to your podcast?
Not yet. We haven't analyzed the logs from this semester. The course is going to be officially over in a week or so, at which point we'll run the numbers. But I can say that from the sample of emails we've gotten, if the number of emails we've gotten is any indication, we've gotten one or two emails a day for the most part for the past several months. And these are people who have nicely enough taken the time to look up our email address, to write us, and so presumably, there's yet others besides those who have tuned in. So we should know soon what the actual numbers are.
What about the copyright implications? I mean, you are giving a course in Harvard. I suppose that the people in that course pay something, I mean monetary, in order to take that course. But you can take it now as a podcast or as a video cast without paying anything.
True. You can certainly this semester experience the material and acquire the knowledge, as you say, from it. What distinguishes registered students from folks who have simply tuned in via the internet is that this is a course that's actually offered for credit at the Extension School, which means students pursuing undergraduate degrees or master's degrees either at Harvard Extension or perhaps even other schools can receive credit for the course. They can receive feedback from the staff. They also have access to what are actually higher quality videos than the ones that are in the podcast, videos that are synchronized, for instance, with some of the slides and other multimedia material that we use in the course. So absolutely, I think the knowledge that the course conveys is now available, at least for this one semester, via podcast, audio and video. But registered students still have the distinction of, first and foremost, ultimately being able to obtain a degree as a result of getting such credit as this. But then there's also a good number of other resources available to them.
You're telling me right now for this semester. Maybe the next semester it won't be available.
It depends. We shall see. As I mentioned, this was launched as an experiment of sorts. I know of the Extension School will be podcasting at least one other course this coming spring, but the university as a whole is in the process of deciding exactly to what extent it wants to engage in these technologies, podcasting in particular. And so it may be the case that the university embraces podcasting and similar technologies or withdraws from it. So I think we'll know over the coming months what direction the university as a whole wants to go in.
Or even they can charge some amount in order to get those podcasts because, we are talking about money right now.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think the infrastructure isn't quite yet in place, for instance, from iTunes for universities and for smaller operations than record labels to actually be selling content there very easily. But we've begun working with Apple on an experimental basis this semester in a fashion similar to what Stanford University is already doing, since they have a number of their lectures available via a special iTunes interface as well. So I think as the support grows for delivery of the media, whether it's for free or for some fee, I think that's something the university will consider as well.
Okay, great. When you record your podcast, you record it live, right? I
We
mean,
do.
you have no edition about that? You don't make some post-production or something?
We don't edit the videos. We record the videos onto DV tape. We then digitize them as real media, real video and real audio, as well as MP3s as QuickTime. But we don't go in and airbrush anything out or edit the videos, which sometimes is to my disappointment, but this is the raw lecture material that students sitting in the classroom are experiencing as well.
No cuts at all.
No cuts. If I say something stupid, it goes out to the world.
And if you one of your students also say something stupid, go to the world.
True, although the students themselves are not mic'd, so I try to repeat what they say, and usually if that's the case, I try to make them sound wiser when I repeat the question.
Okay, I understand, yeah. Some of them wise. Okay. And what has been your experience with that? I mean, it has somehow enriched your teaching life or your teaching experience.
How has it, I'm sorry, what was the question?
You have get some feedback from other people outside the Harvard University telling you something like, okay, this was wrong or this was right, or how's the feedback about your podcast?
Oh, I see. We've gotten all sorts of notes. We've gotten notes from students simply thanking us for having made the material available. We've gotten notes from individuals pointing out mistakes that we may have made, or comments that could have been delivered more clearly. We've received requests for certain material to be covered. I mean, essentially, we've received exactly the sorts of inquiries that we might get from our own students during a typical semester, and we've done our best to reply to all of the emails that we've received. But certainly, our focus has remained on our own students, and we're appreciative of all the feedback we've gotten. But the experience ultimately has been tailored primarily to our own students. And so we've gotten comments, for instance, on some of the infrastructure, could we microphone students and so forth. And absolutely, all of these are good suggestions. And that too becomes a question of infrastructure and what the lecture halls themselves are capable of. So I think as semesters proceed, I mean, I think the technologies and the productions will only become better. So it's been nice being part of that process so far of developing the infrastructure in the first place.
And what about making your own podcast? I mean, you as a person, not part of the university.
More recently, because we've gotten a number of inquiries from individuals like yourself, I've done a couple of similar interviews with a website in the US by the name of the Typical PC User Podcast, in which I fielded technical questions and done little segments on various technologies. So I've considered it. I think time constraints is perhaps one of the trickiest issues to overcome, but
Yes,
I have no particular plans yet, but I've toyed with the idea.
what about other classes, other teachers that are looking at this? What is the feedback of other teachers that listen to your podcast and they are also teaching on Harvard University? They are trying to make something similar, or they see this as a waste of time for them?
I think we've gotten all sorts of feedback or interest or disinterest. I think one of the biggest concerns for the university are issues of copyright and intellectual property, monetization, for instance, of the material and so forth. But unlike, I think, a lot of technologies, Harvard in particular is really looking at this one, podcasting, quite rapidly, because I think they appreciate that there is a wave of enthusiasm going on right now around podcasting, and this is certainly a trend at other universities to begin releasing more material in formats like this. And so I know various committees that exist at the university level have begun discussing exactly what kinds of resources or rules they want to put in place with respect to podcasting. I do know there's a number of instructors who are fascinated by the idea. For instance, just this morning we added to E1's own podcast a sample lecture from Computer Science E2, which is taught by Harvard College professor Harry Lewis, who is actually tenured faculty at Harvard College, but who's also teaching this course for the Extension School. So what we've done is included a sample lecture from his course in E1's podcast, because Computer Science E2 will be starting up in February, and it too will be made available to the world via podcast. So there's certainly interest among the faculty, both at Extension as well as at Harvard College. So I think we'll see more of it in the future.
I suppose that sometimes a student comes to you and say, hey, I can't make it yesterday, but I listened to the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. And that has been one of the best features of the podcast itself. And this course, E1, has for many years been part of what the Extension School calls its distance education program, which means students have for years been able to take this particular course via the internet by watching real videos or listening to real audios of the lectures. This is the first semester where we have been able to relinquish students from the requirement of being tied to their computer physically, because they can now copy the lectures to their iPod or similar device. And so absolutely, one of the greatest uses and most common uses of the lecture videos from our own students is to watch lectures that they may have missed. Even more so do we see students watching and listening to lectures as simply reviews of lectures that they might not have followed completely, or just before an exam, for instance, usage of the podcasting videos spiked particularly. So really, it's just providing students, our own and other students in the world, with, I think, several different means of accessing the material, and so that students who learn better in the comfort of their own home, being able to pause, tape, rewind, fast forward, versus students who learn best in the classroom, I think we're providing a venue of learning that fits all different learning styles, especially now that we're able to allow people to take these lectures in a portable fashion, as you said earlier.
And I suppose that you get more intelligent questions the other day, for example, or even maybe this can be show up on the grades of your students.
In what sense?
I mean, the grades are better right now because of the podcast.
Possibly. We haven't computed final grades, and I think I don't know if there's enough data with which to draw conclusions, since the course itself changes enough each semester that simply the introduction of the podcast might not have any detectable effect on grades, especially since the videos have long been available to students anyway, albeit in real video format. But there's certainly been enthusiasm over it. In our most recent and final problem set in the course, students were asked a number of debriefing questions. What did you think of the podcast? What did you think of the real video? And even those students who didn't make use of the podcast actually seemed to like, if not love, the idea that the course was experimenting with this kind of technology and made it available to them, even if they chose not to take advantage of it.
What about your experience recording this? What has been the most difficult part of doing this, or you're going to tell me that everything is easy as set up the video camera and start talking?
It was fairly straightforward, to be honest. Because we have already been filming these classes, it was simply a matter of encoding them in a slightly different format, which was not too difficult. I think the only challenging part was, for instance, if I encoded them from over a cable, if I uploaded them via a cable modem connection, it would take an hour to upload 2 hours of lecture videos, but that was not certainly a insurmountable problem. So it's a fairly painless process, and editing the RSS feed is pretty trivial. iTunes makes it very easy to for users to interface with it. So all in all, it was surprisingly easy. I mean, we literally, in September, were able to throw a switch, so to speak, and make this course available to the world.
That seems very, very easy, in fact. Do you have any kind of suggestion for some teacher in Mexico or another part of Latin America who wants to make this? I mean, he has to take care of the legal issues about copyright, or he can just do it without taking care of that, or he has to take some classes or some special equipment to do this. I mean, if I were a teacher and I want to do this, what I have to take care of first?
Sure, I can only speak with respect to United States laws, but certainly the issues that we've had to be sensitive are, one, the privacy of our own students, because we did not want to, for instance, put our own students in the classroom on camera if they did not want to be appearing subsequently in the lecture videos. So we're very careful to make sure that students in the classroom know that if they volunteer for something, which we often do in the class, and they come to the front of the lecture hall, they will be filmed. And we also take care, so far as U.S. privacy laws go, to have each of our students who do appear on camera sign some legal paperwork consenting to their participation in the videos, which may be a requirement in Mexico as well, certainly for the teachers' protections. And then with respect to U.S. copyright laws, too, that's something we've had to be careful of, too, so that we're never showing entire works in their entirety. For instance, the course on two lectures shows actual motion pictures, but these are not things that we can, for instance, film and then redistribute to the world. So as you may have noticed in the podcast, there are no lecture videos for lectures, I think, 3 and 11 or 12. Yeah, right. We simply did not tape. And any of the materials that we make use of in the class, we might let our own students in the classroom access them electronically, but we don't subsequently make them available to the whole world. We just make the videos themselves available. So I would say student privacy and copyright issues are the two issues that we at least have been have had to be careful about, and I presume it would be the same in other countries as well.
With this kind of technology, the way that the universities are working right now about being present there and assist to a class will change in the following years?
Will the course change because of these new technologies? Is that what you ask?
Yeah.
Not significantly, I don't think. I think that we are simply presenting students with yet another window into the classroom, if you will, another means of accessing the course, another means of accessing the material. And, for instance, I have not particularly changed my teaching style over the years as we've added a camera to the classroom, because I think, one, the lectures remain more interesting if it actually is of a class in which there's interaction and questions and answers from the students, rather than, for instance, a guy in a TV studio simply talking to a camera. I don't think it's not quite the same. It doesn't approximate the classroom environment quite as well. But I think, too, our focus has necessarily had to remain on our local students, only because I do think that for the most part, the best experience is to be had in the classroom itself, where you can raise your hand and ask questions, where you can see the demos that we pass along. And certainly for students who cannot make it to Cambridge, Massachusetts, watching the course or listening to the course electronically is perhaps the next best thing. But I think we've always taken care to prioritize the delivery of information and the feedback to students. And so simply having a camera in the classroom hasn't changed our approach as much as it's changed students' ability to access that material subsequently.
Okay, well, that seems to be everything, in fact. We were trying to do this as a way to show the Mexican people and the Latin American people, and especially teachers, how can they use technology in order to use it as an advantage to teaching, to make a better teaching experience to the assistance of the class. I think that one of the greatest things, and at first you seem to be, you look this and say, well, this is Harvard University. It's not any university in the world. It's one of the best universities in the world. And they are releasing this with no cost at all. So I can take the same courses that the people who pay in order to go there, I can take it at my house, and even I can take it in my iPod, and I can watch it and listen to the courses while I am on commuting or on the road.
Exactly.
That seems to be great.
No, I think it's...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, I think it's an exciting time simply as bandwidth increases throughout the world and email and the internet becomes more popular. The world is rapidly becoming a much smaller place, whereas 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it was not certainly as easy for someone in Mexico or Europe or anywhere in the world to access information that might be flowing out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. And so I think it's wonderfully exciting in education and other spheres, simply having these flows of information more readily accessible.
I think that covers most of the things that we have talked about. When are you going to release the next semester?
If we continue with the podcast, the next semester for E1 would start up in September of 2006. In the meantime, as I mentioned, Professor Harry Lewis will be podcasting Computer Science E2, which is a course called BITS, and is similar in spirit to E1, but covers very different material. And that course will begin podcasting in February of 2006, so just in a couple of weeks. So if users check out that preview video in E1's own podcast, then they will find in the description in iTunes the URL of Computer Science E2 so that they can, in February, subscribe to that podcast as well.
So what's the homepage? What's your homepage for your podcast?
For the course itself, it is www.fas, as in Faculty of Arts and Sciences,
yeah,
.harvard.edu/tilde CSCIE1, as in Computer Science E1. And I can email that to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to put that in our blog so our users can go there. And the people who hasn't had the chance to take one of your courses via podcasting or videocast can do it now.
Oh, terrific. That would be great.
Well, David, it was a real pleasure. Sorry for my English. I'm a little bit rusty because I don't have anyone to talk with here in Mexico. But
no, está bien. Hablo un poco español, pero not well enough to do a whole interview, I think.
Well, I speak a little English, but your English is better than my Spanish.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, David, we are hoping to listen to you and to see you again in your new release of the podcast. We are hoping that the university continues with this. It has been something very different for us in Latin America and, I mean, in all the world to be able to access this kind of courses of high-quality training free. It has been great for us.
Well, thank you for your interest and for dropping me a note in the first place. It's been a pleasure.
Well, David, take care and have a very nice day.
You too as well.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.